Good morning, and welcome to the 2012 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo presented by Retail Online Integration. I'm Joe Keenan, Senior Editor of Retail Online Integration. I'm pleased to welcome you to another great live session, Customer Service Trends for Retailers. This session is sponsored by Merchant eSolutions. Here today to offer their thoughts and expert advice on customer service trends and best practices that cross-channel retailers need to be aware of are Lauren Friedman, President of the E-Tailing Group, an e-commerce consulting firm, which has just released its 15th annual Mystery Shopping Study focused on customer service, and Doug Cadmus, web guy for Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, a leader in specialty coffee and coffee makers. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists at any time. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the session. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. Lastly, if you leave this session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Retail Marketing Virtual Show on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Monday, April 23rd. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Lauren Friedman to kick things off.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Joe. And we should definitely thank Joe for being here because his wife may be delivering a baby anytime soon. So if we don't hear from him later on, we'll know why. So the good news is hopefully they'll receive good customer service. And we're here to talk today about customer service trends for retailers. And that is certainly a topic that I've long been passionate about at the E-Tailing Group, along with merchandising. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the E-Tailing Group, we like to think of ourselves as the voice of cross-channel merchandising, sort of straight talk from the in-the-trenches online merchandising experts. As Joe mentioned, we've been involved in e-commerce for the past 16 years. We're very proud of our mystery shopping studies, which has been half-focused on merchandising and half-focused on customer service, and we'll be sharing some of the highlights with you today. Generally, our projects are working with, large Fortune 500 retailers on strategy, customer experience, and then also we do a lot of work with the technology industry from a thought leadership perspective. So we're excited to share a little bit about customer service, and I'm excited to be here with the web guy, Doug Cadmus from Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, and I'll turn it over to him to share a little bit about Green Mountain.
Good morning, everyone, and also my best hopes for Joe on upcoming expectations there. Green Mountain Coffee Roasters is a little coffee company in New England that has seen some measures of success recently. We've become a little bit more known in the last few years for our entry in the single cup marketplace, but we remain a company that's focused on trying to create great coffee experiences that are socially just and undeniably delicious. And if we can do that through convenient single cup format, well, that's just great. My role at Green Mountain has been web guy for 8 years. When I first came on board, I was the web guy. Now I lead a team of web application developers. I consult on user experience all across our enterprise. And have a great time at the intersection of web and coffee.
Now, there's a good combination. In my mind, you'll always be the web guy. Let's just leave it at that, right? So let's go ahead and dig right in, and we're going to share this speech together, Doug and I. So before we get started, I want to tell you a little bit about the E-Tailing Group Customer Service Indexing Methodology. And each year we select a series of winners for merchandising as well as customer service, and this session is going to focus on the customer service side of things. So what we do is we pick a series of winners, and they're revealed by a process whereby sites are like systemically eliminated for not possessing what we believe are some of the must-have features in the following order. So accessibility of the 800 number, we're very passionate about it. We're always big stinkers about this on the Amazon front. We like to see it on the homepage and ideally in a prominent location, which is what achieves a 3. We hope that people will answer their email questions within 24 hours. The overall experience that we have, because we contact merchants via email, via phone, and via chat if they make it available to us. So we'd like to see at least a 2 out of 3 in terms of their efficiency and their knowledge. We also expect to see an email order confirmation sent that has an order number on it, as well as customer service included. So some people will send it, but there's no information to reach them. 3 or 4 fewer days to receive the package. I mean, in today's logistic world where, you know, it seems like you hit the button and the package is at the door, you know, retailers are up against the wall a bit there. And then the presence of a one-click or quick checkout feature of some sort, and then wanting to see 5 or fewer clicks to checkout. So who performed well in the mix? And in that mix of 100 merchants, we had the following people. You can see it's a bit of an A to Z of retail. We represent 15 different consumer categories. So these are the folks that made the cut this year. In terms of the winners, well, the great news is we'll start with Green Mountain, which is one of the reasons why we had them join the call. And then we had Ballard Designs, Front Gate, Garnet Hill, so Cornerstone did really well, The Home Depot, Tiffany & Company, Williams-Sonoma, Wine.com, and Zappos. So some folks that are certainly well-known, you know, for their service, you know, built a culture around it, and I think even some retailers that you might not expect to see on the list. So we're excited to share that with you today. So how did they win, and what did they have to do? So as I mentioned before, you can kind of get a quick sense here of their overall customer experience. So, for example, let's pick on Garnet Hill. Garnet Hill had a 2.5 out of 3 in terms of the call center contact. They had 28 minutes to answer the email from the time we asked them a question, and they had to answer it correctly. You see a number of people. That's probably the fastest. Front Gate was 4 hours. You've got even Home Depot at 1 hour. So, again, a lot of people very, very quick on the trigger, which is great. And then you also see the number of clicks from selection of the product through checkout, as well as the number of business days to receive the item. So this kind of just gives you a flavor of where things fell from a service perspective.
Yeah, I look at these figures, and in particular I look at the 5 hours, 9 minutes that you've got here for Green Mountain Coffee. And in some respects, I kind of pine for the good old days when it was admittedly easier and faster to respond to customers via email when we had fewer of them, which is not a particular problem. But it was useful to be able to just walk over and chat with folks in customer care about an issue. Now our customer base is 1,000 times as large. We have multiple call centers. It's important that we create systems that work effectively to take the place of that one-on-one contact that we used to be able to have. Again, not a bad problem to have overall.
And I think what's great about that and what to point out is that one of the things that I think you guys have always strived for is because of the nature of the culture of having a certain type of experience. And what we learn is that the customer really doesn't care about those issues. They only care about having their problem solved. And so I think we are all in a position where we need to execute. And I think the ways and the timing that the customer is willing to wait continues to get compressed. Mm-hmm. So when we look at things, customer service really starts with the customer, and in our minds that means accessible information, timely delivery, comprehensive content, which we're going to be talking about, self-service tools, because we all know that the customer who shops online is a control freak, and smart and quick answers to questions and concerns. They don't want to wait, and they get a little bit cranky when they do have to wait.
I think one of the aspects that goes along with that, the customer service and smart and quick answers to questions and concerns, sometimes a good service means quickly owning up to mistakes, and I thought it would be fun to show you one of ours. We sent a reactivation message to a segment of our already highly activated and loyal shoppers. It was, frankly, an opportunity to screw up things rather rather dramatically. And so we very quickly made good on it by honoring the offer that we had made to one segment, merely recasting it for our loyal shoppers. So they got the same discount, they got the same offer, and we made it clear that, hey, wow, we screwed up, we own it, we're raising our hand, thanks for being that loyal shopper.
And I think that's certainly, you know, honesty is the best policy and probably one of the best retention strategies any merchant can put in play. So what do we encourage you to do? We encourage you to start with the standards. And the standards in our mind were all features that we looked at and evaluated as part of the mystery shopping in the fourth quarter that all exceeded 90%, so almost universal penetration. The 800 number for the first time reached 100%. We were thrilled to see that, even though some people do their best to bury it. Having contact information available to you, that immediate order confirmation number in the shopping cart, a post-order email confirming that you have, in fact, received our order, that it's been placed. It's always nice as a customer to feel like, okay, you know they have it. Real-time inventory on the product page, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're telling us how much inventory you have, but that you're letting us know that that product is in stock and will be ready for shipping. And then email shipping confirmation at 94%. Again, there's a number of merchants, you know, 6% don't send a confirmation, which, you know, we think that's an opportunity and an important time to connect with the customer and still kind of give that reassurance that they need.
About that 800 number, it's time to say enough already with the cutesy messages to spell out brand messages like we had for years, 1-888-TRY-GMCR. Some folks have phones that don't have letters on the number pad, and just about every smartphone in the world would be pleased as it could be to dial the number for you if only it wasn't obfuscated with somebody's text message instead.
So I think the bottom line is clear, easy, and accessible is what works for the customer today. So speaking of accessible, let's talk a little bit about accessible information here. And I brought a couple of examples here and, you know, test a myriad of ways to show that you're ready when they are. The example on the right I really like from Zappos because it's basically a screen that a shade that comes down. It allows you to talk to the customer the way that they want to be talked to, whether it's by phone, via email, live chat. Have it your way, but they put it right out there for you. And Land's End, I also include because I think they've always been, you know, one of the stellar service-driven companies. Anytime I interact with them, I think particularly I've done the live chat, makes it really easy to do business with them. And the beauty of it is not only do they answer it, but they're knowledgeable. And I think that's the winning combination from a retail and a consumer perspective. So customer-centric help really reinforces one's brand. And I think two companies that have done a nice job of looking at this has been Target is part of their redesign. You know, they make help front and center. The visual imagery that they use, you know, the Target employee that you see, as well as even, you know, coming from Aveda, also very strong in the customer service. They let you know we're here to help. It's well-branded. They call it the email. They make a series of links available to you. So you can drive the experience as you like. But I know, Doug, that you have some thoughts in this area.
Well, I think there's customer-centric help, which you see in this view where you've got this specific help space. But there's also contextual help, and I think it's important to recognize the difference. A customer service library like this is great for answering general questions, but even a super help center may not be as effective as a hint that's delivered in context, say while you're trying to complete a form. Having that information, being able to answer that question right there at that time when it occurs in the mind of your shopper can be much more effective.
And I think what's interesting is that this is one place, but I think there are multiple places on the site that help or those kinds of directions can really make a difference. I mean, most of us don't think about these things until we're in need. And I think that's when you really want to be thinking about this. It can be on-site as well as via post-order communication to reinforce that.
Mm-hmm.
Position of guarantee is a confidence builder. You know, you don't have any remorse when you pull the trigger, when you know that there's a guarantee, and if you don't like it, you return it, and if you can return it for free, all the better. So Sundance does a nice job of highlighting their guarantee in their About Us section, but then speaking to Doug's point about contextual, also showcasing that guarantee throughout the site.
And I think having a guarantee like that is an awfully useful thing to do when you're a big retailer. And I think it's imperative when you're a small retailer still, and your customers may not really know who you are. Particularly if you're really small, you may need to guarantee or back up that guarantee with customer testimonials as well. You know, one of your customers saying, I took advantage of the guarantee, and they stood by their product. They did well by me.
And again, I think an excellent retention tool. And so what's important there is, one, do you have a guarantee? Do you want to have a guarantee? And I found a number of times with clients when I'm working on projects that they're basically the kind of company who does take care of the customer. So why not, you know, make the customer aware of that and I think avoid becoming an abandonment statistic. In-stock status informs shoppers and secures the order online or cross channel. And I think, as we know, the whole notion of cross channel and with mobile coming into play becomes really critical, and the customer doesn't want to wait. So they want to understand, do you have this product? And if you have the ability to not only show that information, you should have it available on the product page, within the shopping cart. And then if you're cross channel, I think you want to make it accessible, you know, through a product locator tool to understand which store is it available in. I mean, I use this tool all the time. I mean, I happen to leverage my Barnes & Noble, wanting to make sure that there'll still be a bookstore in my neighborhood. And, my daughter will need a book just yesterday. I go on there, I see if it's available, and I'm actually able to reserve the book. And 15 minutes later, I get the, we have it on hold for you. And that kind of convenience is very, very powerful for the time-starved customer.
Yeah, it's very powerful, and it's clearly, you know, a no-brainer proposition in terms of serving your customers well. As a tech guy, particularly when you're talking cross-channel implementations, it can be a really teeth-grinding proposition for IT folk to be able to get that live inventory status available in that multi-channel environment. Probably a worthwhile one.
And I think, you know, unfortunately, we never cut those tech guys any slack. You know how that goes, Doug.
Win one for the tech guys.
So take advantage of those post-order communication to reinforce delivery details. And so I talked about this a little bit earlier, a wonderful example coming from L.L. Bean, where not only are they letting you know in the holiday season how many days to your delivery, you know, we don't say that you have to take it that far, but it's nice to know that you, in fact, have it. And then take advantage of this post-order communication to do a little bit of merchandising. You know, to see if you can get that second order, particularly during the holiday season, it's a great location for a gift card. We'll give a few merchandising tips along the way.
I think post-order presents a lot of really intriguing opportunities, and maybe too many. I mean, there's the question of, do you leverage a space for cross-brand promotion? Do you try to lure your shoppers into a loyalty program? Use the opportunity to link social media tools to accelerate your word-of-mouth messaging? And I think really the answer relies somewhere in testing them. Try them and choose carefully, because I really feel you're only going to get one solid call to action post-purchase, because once somebody's navigated away from this confirmation page to do something, chances are they're not going to have the opportunity to get back to it.
So you're going to have to hit it and hit it right at that point. So I think, to Doug's point, this is where testing really comes into play. Timely delivery accelerates with logistical improvements. I don't think we can talk enough about this. You know, what you see in the chart below is the different categories that we look at. The number of merchants that are in that category. So let's say, as an example, you see in apparel we have 15 merchants. The number of merchants who fulfilled in 2 days or less was one, yet in drugstore, health, and beauty, 3 merchants out of 7 fulfilled in that time frame. Food and gifting, 4 out of 9. Mass merchants, you know, 6 out of 8, because they're probably investing, you know, certainly, 0 out of 8. So again, you've got a range of different scenarios, but at the end of the day, 27 out of the 100 merchants, so one in four merchants, delivered within 2 days. And that's what we're all up against, I think, you know, on the Amazon front, is we're being pushed, you know, to get that product out there a lot quicker to the consumer. And then you see on the right-hand side the list of merchants who are actually able to make that happen. And not all of them, even though we are fulfilling to the Midwest, you can see that not all of them are necessarily, you know, close to us, but still make that happen.
To me, the question when I look at these figures is, right now, one of the things that is becoming more prevalent is the use of smart post, or programs where the shipper is shipping to the post office and your local postal carrier delivers to the door. Those programs can save the merchant a lot of money. But at what cost? What's the cost of having that delay in gratification for your shopper? Is it worth it?
And I would probably have to say it's probably not. We've experienced a number of times situations like that from the aggregated where it's taken up to 15 days. So I think you have to be really aware of that and really monitor that. And if it's something that you're using, maybe test that also to understand and do some deliveries and see to different parts of the countries and see different parts of the country and see how they play out. There's nothing like missing a kid's Christmas gift, as we all know, and I think that's always a good way, you know, to think about it when you don't have the right item under the tree.
Or Valentine's Day or Mother's Day.
Yeah, Mother's Day. You know how it is. You can be in trouble for almost anything. I've never been in trouble for anything. So speaking of being in trouble, we need to have efficiencies to serve as a fast pass for the shopper. So what are some of those efficiencies that we can put in play and that merchants need to have on their radar screen? And you see here, you'll see the penetration of them this year versus last year. So the pre-population of customer information, nobody wants to fill out that stuff twice, almost universal. Fast buyer direct-to-cart buying on the additional add-on products that you see throughout the site or in particular at the cart level. One-click settings, I think we'll talk about those a little bit later. They also become very important, particularly as it relates to mobile, one out of two people. PayPal already 46%, almost half the sites having them on there. You know, I've heard from some people on a call I was doing the other day that, you know, they're just saying that this is for some people the only way that they pay. Single checkout across multiple merchants. So imagine if you're a company that has multiple merchants in your brand. I guess, Doug, in some ways that would be you. Even for large retailers, like, say, a Gap situation, you have the ability to check out on multiple brands. Reordering from the order history, while it's only 15%, very, very powerful mechanism in the office supply space and the replenishment business. And then only 11% happily we can report still require people to be a member and don't allow for guest checkout, which, of course, we're totally against. We're against anything that's mandatory. Monitor your clicks to checkout, evaluating alternative options. So the average number of clicks that we see to checkout was just under 5 at 4.83, and it had shrunk from 5.13 in 2010. While that might not seem that significant when you have 100 merchants, it's hard to get that to go down. Foot Locker takes one approach to it, you know, so whether you choose to do with the collapsible or whether you take a stepped approach to it, there's a lot of options. And I know, Doug, you have some thoughts on the collapsible carts, which I thought were interesting, that you wanted to share.
Well, I think, you know, the collapsible carts and the accordion-style carts, I think they work great on the desktop. I've got some concerns that they're going to be a problem for mobile screens, particularly as we look to things like responsive web design, where we're trying to build a single application experience regardless of what device you're using. We're just kind of tailoring it a little bit and giving you more or less functionality based on whether you've got a smartphone, whether you've got an iPad. And I think some of these collapsible style checkout systems might be problematic to that. That's one of the things we're in a discovery phase of right now.
Well, it'll be interesting, and I know I interviewed for a mobile piece that I was working on, and one of the people that I interviewed is probably one of the most successful from a mobile perspective, and he said the great thing about doing it is you learn to streamline and test things and simplify because your screen is so small. So in some ways, it's like the old days of trying to go from, you know, a store-based scenario, a catalog, to a PC, and even more stringent to go to a mobile, you know, to such a small screen size.
Yeah, there's a compelling argument right now to be made that says design for mobile first, design for that distilled functionality first, and then fill in for those larger screens and desktops, all those other things that you might want to use to complement that initial most important distilled experience.
Yeah, that was actually his exact point of view, and he said he's actually been able to apply some things to the larger screen that he was forced to do for the smaller, because it's almost harder to do simplicity. So I think that that's probably quite logical. Pre-populate for customer convenience. So again, we talked about that before. I mean, it speaks for yourself. No one wants to retype. No one wants to spend any more time than they already don't have. One-click settings save shoppers time. So, again, anything that you can do, you know, we know Amazon basically invented this. You know, I know when I'm buying something on Amazon, I almost feel like I'm not even making a purchase. I hit that one click, and it's like it's as though I don't even use my credit card, you know, until the bill comes. So, again, think about that. Think about the ways that you can position it. Other great examples that I've seen have included things like, you know, express checkout, you know, but position it and message it to the customer so that it implies fast. Payment options ensure all customers can pay their way. You know, I remember hearing even a couple years ago that there were more PayPal users than card users than American Express cardholders. So again, these kinds of payment options are very, very powerful. So whether it's a Bill Me Later or a PayPal, we expect to see more of these as we move along.
This is one of those bridges that we at Green Mountain haven't crossed yet. I think we probably will soon, and maybe not for the reason that you might imagine. In some usability testing, we found an interesting segment of shoppers who have essentially gravitated to a particular payment system, frequently PayPal, and that's all they use. And they won't shop at sites that don't support it, and they don't give out their credit card to anyone else, and their point of view is essentially, I'm sharing my personal information with one entity, and if something goes wrong, I know where the problem is. I don't have to worry that a dozen other merchants may have my information and that it may have leaked from one of those places. So I think it's an interesting new kind of thinking that's kind of crept into our customer base.
Well, and I think also as, you know, mobile proliferates and social proliferates, you know, there's still some hesitancy, and we're seeing that in some of the consumer research that we're doing, and that probably speaks to the mindset of that consumer that you just described. Mm-hmm. Customer-controlled tools allow customers to pace themselves at their convenience. And what we're really showing here is the ability to save it to a wish list or to save an entire cart or do things that you can control. Maybe you're not ready. I know a lot of times I'll start shopping and my daughter comes home and I can't finish, but I don't want to have to go back and re-put everything into my cart. So for a lot of us, we use those shopping carts as our sort of holding pen. It's like having it in the dressing room temporarily before we're ready to check out. So think about all the things that you might be able to do to make things convenient for your customers. Leverage technology to keep a sale in a customer. This is a wonderful example from Crutchfield here, you know, where something might be out of stock, unfortunately, and you can receive an email when this product becomes available. While not being used universally, it's a great tool and a great way for you to be in touch with your customers without kind of making them an offer of something they're not likely to be interested in. This way you can come back to them, particularly if you have a lot of, you know, out of stock throughout the course of the year. It could be a fashion business and you re-bring that product back in, or just hot product that, you know, goes out of stock temporarily. It's a great way for you to do a service for your customers.
And a great excuse to have another touch point.
Well, exactly. It's a way to touch them without, you know, having to be a little bit overly promotional.
Yeah.
Virtual carts keep your brand top of mind. So again, this good example from Dell, and while it might not apply for everyone, I know it's something that I certainly have used over the years. I like to keep track of it. I like to hold on to that and, you know, move forward. So again, a powerful way to keep your customer coming back that they can also use as a tool as well.
We've implemented something similar. Ours is more Amazon's save for later kind of feature, so that in the context of the shopping cart itself, an individual can choose to hit a button and save a particular product, a particular line item, to a perpetual portion of the cart. So even when they complete the order that they're working on today, that product that they may not have in budget today is right there. It's ready to go. It's essentially bookmarked, and they can easily come back to it.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the beauty of reorders, too, is reorders quickly retain shoppers. Utilize on-site and communicate to foster replenishment. So whether you're Petco and you've got a quick order capability for the bottomless bowl program that they have, or Sephora where you might be running out of your makeup and you can quickly order that, while that might not work for everyone, that reorder history I know is something that I tap into, particularly on the beauty side, to take advantage of. I don't want to have to remember, what I had purchased in the past or what the shade of the makeup is. I want to boom, I want to be done with it.
When it comes to replenishment and reordering, we're fans. We've spent a significant amount of time putting together our Cafe Express Savings Program. We've done a lot of research around how our shoppers want to do replenishment purchasing. And even with all that, it's still a challenge to keep this in the right space and to kind of position this against other loyalty programs that, particularly in an economy that can sometimes be challenging, may not lend itself to people being willing to subscribe to something or to join something or to become a member and have that mean that there's going to be additional purchases that are going to be automatically coming to them. Some folks are a little bit averse to that right now. But on the whole, reorder replenishment programs still have a lot of win inherently built in them.
Well, and I think the beauty of it is you have to know your business and know your category. It's not necessarily going to work for everyone, but where it works, it's incredibly effective. Return efficiency is core to retention. I'm a big fan of this because I'm, as you can only imagine, I'm a huge online shopper, though I do support the typical retail stores as well. But you can see this really nice example from Amazon. I could have showed a Zappos example, which is kind of what got me going on it. Make it easier for people to return. It's not that everybody is going to, but you don't want to be in a position where you put roadblocks ahead of the customer when it comes to returns. So you can see that 25% now have an online return process, up 8% from last year, and also 51% offer some sort of prepaid return label. It doesn't mean that I'm not paying for it as a customer, but it still makes it more convenient for me. Service means timely response via all touch points. In the same way they want to receive it quick, they want their answers quick. So here what you found is that 96% of the people actually answered the question. Two people we didn't even have the opportunity to ask an email because they had no point of contact there. The average number of hours was 31 hours and 27 minutes. That was actually up from last year, unfortunately. The good news is 79% of the folks answered the email correctly. We love to see a specific or a more tailored response to us. And then you can see from a call center perspective, the length of the call was on average about 4 minutes. We're asking a product question, not a service-related question. Our experience was just above average at a 2.33 out of 3. Only 14% actually tried to close the sale in any way, and the quality that we received was actually good at 2.49 out of 5. Customers will gravitate to live chat. I think live chat is going to play an growing role. We do some research in this area over the past few years. We just completed some last month. Very, very interesting. You know, 1 in 5 shoppers preferred live chat as their communication method of choice for contacting a retailer. And today, 47% of the EG100 offer chat. That's something I think should be on, you know, the minds of the merchants and will be important, particularly moving forward, I think. And if you don't handle your customer service well now, then I'd say don't use live chat because all you're going to do is bring bad service to a new touch point. But if you do excel, it's really an opportunity to make a difference for your customers. Reinforce your brand value proposition, soliciting feedback from your consumers. You know, at the end of the day, you want to hear from your customer, and I think REI does a nice job with their post-order communication. They reinforce that guarantee that we talked about. They provide expert advice. If you want it, you know, get in touch with them, and they reinforce the fact that they have an REI Visa, you know, that they can make available, you know, that a lot of their co-op members might just be interested in. Tie into social. You know, we probably can't talk enough about social. It's a little bit, you know, hard to tell where social's going to go. We all know it's going to be something. We're not sure, but I think it's an opportunity we need to understand how the customer wants to be engaged.
Yeah, there's so many ways to try to tie into social right now, and it's important to understand, while it's got, you know, some traditional word of mouth components to it, it's more than just word of mouth with an amplifier. We're still trying to figure out the best ways to engage and the best ways to measure what we've done. For us, there's a lot of testing in our future, probably the same for everyone else listening to this call.
Yes, I think we are all amplifying our testing everywhere, which is a good thing because you can find out the information that you need prior to taking it live and investing in it. Yeah. And lastly, I'd just like to encourage people to remember the personal touch. The personal touch goes a long way. I know when we were first doing a project with Green Mountain a few years ago and we received the email and we called them, you know, there was a certain sentiment about what it was like to talk to the person there that knew the product, that was passionate about it. And so I think the more that you can really connect to the customer and make an impression, that can be an unbelievable retention tool. So lastly, I'd just like to offer to anyone on the call, we do as part of our little shameless promotion here, each year we do an annual benchmarking against this mystery shopping data. So if this is something that you're interested, we can benchmark against your category as well as all 100 merchants. So I encourage you to let us shop your site and learn a few tricks that may help you and help to prioritize your merchandising and your customer service next year so that you're on the winner's list next time. So with that said, I'm going to thank Doug, who was a great co-panelist. We had a good time doing this, and we're both happy to take some Q&A. Turn things back over to Joe if he's still with us.
Yep. Thanks, Lauren. Thanks, Doug. Some great information there. Like Lauren said, we have some time here for some question and answer. So once again, just want to remind you, you can submit your questions using the Q&A box. So we'll jump right in here with the questions. The first question I have is, what online metrics should I be tracking to give me an indication if my customer service efforts are effective?
I mean, we can probably share that. I mean, I think, you know, you probably want to have some standard call center metrics. You know, how many queries you're receiving by touch point. If it's call center driven, how long are you on the phone? How many people are, how much time, how much are you on hold time? I think there's kind of a series of metrics that people typically look at. How satisfied is the customer? How many people place an order? Those types of things. If it's email, I think some of the metrics that we included with the, you know, time it takes to answer the email, I think you also want to understand what are the industry benchmarks in that regard. And then live chat, I think, has its own set of metrics. The other thing that I would touch on there is that, you know, a number of people will use customer satisfaction surveys. Some people might use like a BizRate or a 4C results that can provide information, you know, where you're being tripped up, that type of thing. I mean, Doug, I'm sure you have a million ideas there.
Well, I think you've covered the vast gamut of them. What I would add to that is that it's important to pay attention to how those change over time. Particularly as you're adding new features, as you're adding that context-sensitive help, as you're, you know, maybe supersizing your online help center, you're adding live chat. What's happening to where folks are using customer care? Are they doing it online? Are they still doing it through the call center? Did you actually move the dial, and did you move the conversation where you want it to be when you created a new feature?
I think the other thing that's important, too, that I've heard, I did some interviewing on mobile and social at the early part of the year, is that are people tapping into Twitter or are people tapping into Facebook? I heard a number of people talk to me about a ton of customer service through Facebook questions coming in. And I also think you want to have some measurement of how the different CSRs might be handling it, because what you need at one touch point, like the person who answers the phone, may need to be a little bit schmoozier. The person who needs to email has to be able to type and spell, God forbid. And then the person, you know, who's doing live chat has to have kind of a combo effect. So you've got to, I think, understand that you want to monitor the service and support levels from the different people and how they compare one to another. And as Doug, I thought that was a great point about the shifting, like where is it changing and, you know, where is it headed? And yep. Can you support that? They're not going to wait for you. You open up the Facebook page, they'll write anything in an empty box.
Ain't that the truth?
Right. We won't say what, but no.
Here's another question from an audience member that's interesting, and I'd like to get your guys' thoughts on it. they want to know if making returns easier for customers then, as a result, creates higher return rates. Either of you have any thoughts on that?
I don't buy that. I mean, I think that, yes, it's the fear. That's the same thing. If I make the 800 number more prominent, more people are going to call me, which is probably more likely to happen. If you want to return something, you're going to return it. And I think categories sort of have inherent return rates with them. And I find that it's not like I return more to Zappos because of that, but I return a lot, but I also buy a lot. So I might choose to make them my preferred, you know, shoe channel of choice. And when Nordstrom's went and sort of matched that with free shipping and free returns, I now buy more through there. Yes, in the past I might have had to have gone to the store, but I don't know. You know, if a woman wants to return something, she's going to find a way to return it. We don't want to own it. And I think you're doing a service for the customer, and it's actually a retention tool in the long run.
Yeah, and that's the part that I would glom on to. A return is an opportunity to have a conversation with your customer. And if you've got someone who wants to return something, you've got a great opportunity to figure out, was it a problem with the product, was it a problem with the service, was it a product with the delivery, and learn a lot about your organization.
Yeah, and I think that's another great thing, you know, to kind of go back to the other customer service question, is that going through that information and culling that information on a high frequency is really important, because I find that even projects that I work on, I actually read a lot of that data, and I almost always find, like, the silver bullets or the things that I can do from reading that data. So reading those customer comments has a lot more merit sometimes than looking at a pure number. But I think there's an expectation that I bet that number will double in the next couple of years where you can be able to return the product. It's hard to maintain a competitive advantage otherwise.
Right. One area you guys addressed was live chat. An audience member was interested in about your thoughts on the best way to integrate live chat onto your website and how best to introduce it to your site visitors.
Well, actually, I mean, we have a paper on that you could probably actually read, too. But I would say there's a couple things. One, I think it depends on how you can support it. So as an example, if you went to, you know, somewhere like Orvis, you don't always see it on. So let's say I'm looking to chat in fly fishing and the fly fishing experts are off duty. You can turn it on and off. So I think you have to understand what is the level of support and also what are the goals that you want to achieve for it. Most of the time where we see it certainly is, well, a couple of things. One, we'll see it within the customer service section. I think I showed an example of that with the Zappos and with the Land's End. You'll see it there. You'll see people deciding whether or not in the shopping cart is typically another time. And I think it depends also if your question is about proactive chat and if you're trying to talk about whether or not proactive chat you want to deploy that because people have different sentiments. So typically people set time parameters, like I've been on the site for a certain amount of time, or I'm frustrated, or I'm in a checkout position and I can't get through it and I get an error code. So I think you have to kind of look at it. Are you looking for it to be something that you always make available? Are you looking for something that you want to proactively deploy out there? But there's a lot of papers on that, and if whoever the chat person is, if they want to email, we can certainly provide them a lot of information on that.
We've done some experimenting with live chat. We haven't deployed it universally, and we haven't because we want to make sure that when we do, we're able to handle questions that come in through live chat that can't be handled in live chat as a warm transition into our call center. We don't want someone to have to start a customer service conversation all over again from the beginning because, frankly, there's nothing that's more frustrating than having to do that.
Okay. We'll wrap up with this one. The audience member says that they're a retailer who engages their customers via multiple channels. Are there any tips that you guys can give to help them make sure that their customer service operations policies are consistent across its organization?
Well, my reaction to that is it's the kind of thing that you really have to be vigilant about and you really have to monitor. So do you have a program in place that allows you to track it? I would encourage you to do your own mystery shopping of all those touch points to monitor that. And I think it's something that needs to be ingrained in the culture. So when I think about going to REI as an example, I always feel like they give amazing service. But I think it's because the training is superior in those organizations and very, very powerful. And we all know what it's like to be in a place where someone knows something but also treats you in a particular way. So I feel like that starts from the top, and it's cultural, and it has to be managed, and it's core to, like, the brands that, you know, typically thrive. And, you know, and it's not necessarily cheap, but I think it'll serve you well.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time, but before we let you go here, I just want to again, first off, thank Lauren and Doug for their time today. Gave us some great information. And then on behalf of Retail Online Integration and Merchant eSolutions, I want to thank you, the attendees, again for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Please also check out the agenda for the rest of today. We have some wonderful sessions lined up and encourage you to view as many as you can. Remember, if you can't watch them live, add them to your briefcase and view at your convenience in the on-demand environment. Thanks, and have a great day, everyone.